We will go to the fourth one, where Krishna is now telling us what he is going to talk about Tyaga. He says in verse number 4, Nishchayam shrunu me tatra.
Nishchayam shrunu me tatra.
Tyage bharata sattama.
Tyage bharata sattama.
Tyago hi purusha vyagra. Trividas samprakirtitah. So nishchayam shrunome. So hear from me what is the clear definition or description. Shrunu. Shrunu means listen. See, there is a difference between hearing and listening. Like you may hear, like, you know, teenagers are a prime example. They hear but they don't listen. Husbands also, you know, they hear but they don't listen. Wife will say, she'll say, I told you last time, last night. He said, I didn't hear it. They totally deny. So there are some people who are very experts in that, hearing but not listening. So here he says, don't just hear, listen. Listen to me. Shrunu me tatra, what? Nishchaya, clearly understand. Tyage, what is tyaga? Oh, Bharata Sattama, oh, best among Bharatas. See, that's another technique that Krishna has. Because if you want somebody to listen to you, first you have to praise him. Like you say, this is the best class I have ever taught. All the students say, yeah, this teacher is very good. He knows who I am. And then he gets bloated. So when he gets bloated, then you can put knowledge in him. Otherwise, he's compressed. You can't. When his student is bloated, aha, this teacher is very good. He knows my capabilities. So when you praise somebody, that's the best way to get him to listen to you. So that's why he says, Bharata Sattama. You are the best among the Bharata
family.
You want
us to praise the husband so they listen to him?
Yes. Say, honey, you do such good work for me. Then his ego will be bloated. And then there is space for you to put ideas. So Bharata Sattama, I will tell you about Tyaga. Tyaga, he indeed, Tyaga is what? Oh, Purusha Vyagra. Now he is another praise for Arjuna. Purusha Vyagra, he says, you are the tiger among men. So you are the best. So tiger among men, Gurudev interprets it as the person, just as a tiger has a lot of courage. You know, he can, very powerful. So a tiger among men means one who has the courage to give up his old ideas and learn. See, to give up old ideas, we are so attached and we are so fearful. Whether it's my town or my ideas or my home or my, you know, surroundings, we are so afraid to give up, especially ideas. We get so caught up. I'm a conservative, I'm a liberal, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a tea party. So to give up the ideas needs courage. And you cannot learn unless you are ready to give up old ideas. New ideas cannot come. That's why when they say, when you approach a teacher, approach with a blank slate. Oh, teacher, I don't know anything. You write on it. But if your slate already has a lot of writing, you know, if you have so confused, and I find some students, they have read so much and they are so confused and their mind, it's like your slate is already full of writing and then the poor teacher has no place to write. Why? Because your slate is already full. We are not saying that you should not think for yourself. But the idea is that when you find a good teacher, be receptive. Be willing to learn, accept his ideas. If you already have preconceived notions and you say, I'm going to see if this teacher knows what he's talking, then, you know, you're not going to learn. So here he says, Purusha Vyagra, Tyaga is of three kinds, Trivida Samprakirtitaha. So in the next few weeks, we'll talk about the three types of Tyaga. But since we had time, so I thought we'll talk a little bit more about Tyaga today, because Tyaga is a very interesting word. Tyaga means give up, give up, give up, give up. So, you know what people will say, from next Sunday, I'm going to give up coming to your class. Why? Because you're telling us to give up and we came here to enjoy the world. You know, khano, khao, piyo, maja karo. What is this? You keep saying give up, tyaga. So what is it that we are giving up? When we say give up, when we say tyaga, what is it we give up? Actually, we are constantly giving up. Like when I'm eating a pizza. What am I giving up? I'm giving up hunger, right? I was very hungry, so I ate a pizza, so I gave up my hunger. So you're giving up. Like I'm watching a movie. So you say, I'm enjoying the movie, but I was, you know, getting bored. I had nothing to do. So I gave up that boredom to enjoy the movie. I'm sleeping at night. I have to give up my bed when it's daytime to function in the world. So night, you have to give up night to function in the world in the daytime. Then after the day is over, at night, again, you have to give up your body identification and your mind to fall asleep. So we are constantly giving up, constantly. So here, what they are teaching us is to give up with the, give up the wrong attitudes, but do the right thing. And then some people say, I'm not going to do any work. I'm just going to sit in the Himalayas and meditate. But they say, but that's true. You can meditate, but then 12 o'clock in the noon, you feel hungry, right? The work you have to do. You cannot say, I'm not going to do any work. You have to get up and get some food. To get some food, you have to have work. Maybe one of your disciples will bring you food if you are an advanced Mahatma, or you have to go pick fruits. And also, people who spend a lot of time in the Himalayas or in the, they may be very evolved saints and souls, but when it's time to interact with the world, that's when the knowledge is truly tested. You know, when is your knowledge tested? When you have to deal with people, when you have problems. So what the Gita says, that of course, except few examples like Tapovan Maharaj and all, who were so evolved, but a lot of people, they give up with the wrong attitude. You know, somebody got jilted by his girlfriend. You know, his girlfriend said no to him. So he gets so depressed. He says, I'm going to become a sannyasi. So he puts on orange clothes and says, I'm going to give up the whole world. But his inner vasanas are still there. He still has the desire for girls and the desire for a job and money. All that is not gone, but there's a temporary vairagya. Or they also call smashan vairagya, you know, where you have gone to a cemetery and you have buried somebody, you know, especially somebody who passed away, somebody's close, and you say, what is this life? It's, you know, everything is temporary. From tomorrow onwards, I'm going to become more spiritual, read more books. You know, I don't know when my time will come. That only lasts for a few hours. By next morning, your work is started and you're back. So that vairagya only lasts a few hours. So this, that's not true vairagya. True vairagya comes from understanding. And that's why the Gita has a message of action. Gita is a, that's why the, right away, the teaching starts with Karma Yoga. The third chapter is Karma Yoga. Then he talks about fourth is Yajna, working, you know, with others. And then slowly, you know, giving up the idea of doership and all, Karma Sannyasa, and also those are all later chapters, Bhakti and all that. So the point is that Gita is a message of action. So what Krishna is telling Arjuna, Arjuna had the same vairagya, you know, the temporary vairagya, because he sees all his near and dear ones. He said, I don't want to fight. I'm going to go put on orange clothes and I'm going to wander in the forest and become a sannyasi. But again, his vasanas were not gone. He still had the desire for the kingdom. He still had, so prematurely doing tyaga is inappropriate. So that's why Gita says you purify your mind, unless you are that evolved like Shankaracharya. By age 9, he was gone. Raman Maharishi, you know, when he was just a young boy, he left his home, Buddha left. If you have that much vairagya, but most of us don't. So for us, the Gita way where we work, purify the mind, what we call as sadhana pradhan. And as we are working unselfishly, slowly evolve. So go from tyaga to sannyasa. So actions can be bad or good, right? So the Gita says, obviously it says that bad actions should be given up. And all scriptures say that. You should not lie, you should not cheat, you should not hurt others. So selfish actions that are, you know, bad should be given up. But good actions that we said that are actions of sacrifice, actions of charity, actions of self-improvement should not be given up. So one has to use the discrimination as to what kind of actions I will do and what kind of actions I will not. And all the scriptures, the Ten Commandments, the teachings of Buddha, the, you know, everywhere this knowledge is given in Guru Granth Sahib of the Sikh. Everywhere this do's and don'ts are explained very clearly. And so Gita says you must work, But you must be discriminatory about what kind of actions, and about this yagna, tapa and dhyana, Krishna will talk in more detail. But one of the reasons we must work, I was reading another commentary, it's a very, very beautiful, and I'll talk a little bit about the karma theory. You know, we have talked about this, but this teacher has a new way of looking at it. So he says that the reason we took birth is not only because of vasanas, but we have karmas that we have done, negative karmas, which make us take birth, and so we have to undergo this life. So we start life with a negative. All of us, we not only have vasanas, but we have negative karmas because of which we took birth. So we have to balance our books. And the example, this is what they call as karma balance. So the example they were saying is that in the British days, it's very interesting that banks, you know, they had this Royal Bank of Scotland and Bank of this and Bank of England and all. Now the banks were constructed in such a way that the ground floor was the bank, and the upper floor, the manager used to live there. He was called agent. The manager was British, you know, was white. And the clerks and the workers in the banks were all Indians. So he would live upstairs. So all day then the money would be coming in, money would be going out. There would be debits and, you know, credits and debits. Debit means money going out. The bank is, you know, giving money or lending money, or people are pulling money out of their accounts. And credit, where money is coming in, you know, people are depositing or interest is coming or mortgage. So throughout the day, the clerks would be doing entries, you know, till the bank closed. Say bank closed at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock. Till then the clerks would be doing the entries, debit and credit, coming in, going out, money coming in. In those days, of course, there was no calculator, there was no, you know, computer, nothing. Everything was done by hand. You had to manually calculate and add up. Now, thousands of entries would occur during a day, or hundreds of entries. And so if there was even one error, you know, instead of 7, put 17, or instead of 6, you know, counted 5, or missed 1 0. So what would happen? The books wouldn't balance. At the end of the day, they had to have perfect balance. You know, the credit had to be exactly how much was in the account, how much came in, how much came out. And even if there was a dollar difference, rupee difference, or a few paise, the bank would not close. So this manager, this agent would be sitting upstairs. He would go have dinner, have a drink. And these poor clerks would be sitting to try and figure out who made this mistake. And sometimes till midnight, they would not be able to find out. And the bank door would not open. The bank's door would be locked until every rupee, every penny was balanced. Then only the door would open. And sometimes clerks wouldn't go home till midnight. You can't leave till the books are completely balanced. So that is how our life is. Our life starts with a negative balance of karmas. We all have a debit. And not only that, but society is giving us so much, especially living in this country, that we are constantly accumulating a negative balance towards society. So the only way to satisfy that is by doing more credit, putting more positive actions. So the debit is there, but then I have to keep on doing positive karmas in this life to balance the negativity. In fact, my whole purpose of life should be, again, positive action. I do not mean that you do it because by doing actions, I'll go to heaven or I will fulfill my karmic duty. No, out of love, out of spontaneous love and sharing, I should do positive actions. And what will happen? Slowly the negativity will be reduced. The example they give is like, suppose by mistake, you know, deliberately in my previous life, I had a fight with somebody. I was fighting with a sword and all, and I cost him an eye. You know, I took out his eye and he got blind in one eye. And nothing happened to me in that life. Then in this life, I will have to pay an eye for an eye. And somehow, either by accident or either by sickness, or I may be born without one eye, but somehow I'll have to give it up. But suppose I do so much positive karma. I've done so much good for others. I work unselfishly that I came out because of violence, right? But in this life, I do a lot of non-violence. I serve the world. I help others. I do a lot of charity. I do it out of love, compassion. So what is happening? I'm substituting violence with non-violence. And so my mind becomes so pure that when that karma fructifies, what will happen if a person has spent their life in service? She may not lose an eye. She may be cooking and the fire may light up suddenly high and she may just get her eyebrows burnt or, you know, the eyelashes burnt. So the even though the law of karma is very powerful, but a person who has devoted their life for working for the others, the Lord himself modifies the karma. He himself comes and protects you. So that same eye that she, in her previous life, person had taken, escapes with just a burning of the eyebrows. The karma came, but because of my good actions. So what they are saying is that once you have balanced your karmas to that extent, that your actions are just positive, 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 as much as possible, then slowly that negative gets wiped out. And then your books are balanced. The books are only balanced when the negative karmas have been totally washed off. Either you have undergone them without complaint. So if something happens negative in my life, oh Lord, it's not you who did it. It's not my wife, not my husband, not my boss. It is my own karmas. So either you cheerfully bear them or do so much good that the Lord himself will come and save you. So that is called the true karma balance, where you can actually modify. That is the only way you can modify negative karmas, is by doing so much positive that your balance shifts. So it becomes so heavy, the positive, that the negative becomes weak and then it has no effect on you. So that is called. So that's why they say the karma theory is not punitive. See, some people say it's meant to punish us. You know, if you do something good, you get good. If you don't do bad, you get punished. No, the karma theory is not punitive. It is educational. The reason I'm going through the joys and sorrows of life is for me to learn. That's why Swami Chinmayananda always says, we are all in this hospital. The reason we are on the world, because we are sick. Why we are we sick? Because we have so many vasanas, so many negative karmas. And there is a divine doctor sitting up there who gives us appropriate medicine that we need to evolve. And you must have noticed, when you get something negative, it is because it is meant for your improvement. It's not meant as a punishment. The Lord does whatever he does, just as a doctor, when he gives somebody an injection, it is very painful. But he's not doing it to hurt you. He's doing it to help you. Or if he cuts open your stomach and you have a big tumor, he removes, and for one or two weeks you have bandages and pain. The doctor didn't mean to hurt you. His idea was to remove that tumor. So just as a doctor, out of compassion, you know, to help, takes care of patients, and it may look hurtful, but in the end result is good. So similarly, when negative things happen to me, I have to realize that there is somebody upstairs who is giving me a message how to evolve, message how to get better. And each one of us gets exactly the right amount of medicine we need to improve. Just as a doctor knows, a child, you know, an infant or a child or an adult, he's going to give different doses of medicine. The same medicine given to a child, maybe just, you know, quarter teaspoon, then to a, you know, young boy, maybe a teaspoon, for an adult, maybe 2 tablespoons. So the same medicine is given based on the age, based on the severity of the illness. Somebody is more sick, you know, they may need a longer course of antibiotics. Somebody is not that sick, just, you know, 3 days of Z-Pak is enough. So just as a doctor gives the right amount of medicine needed for a person to get well, so also the doctor above is giving us the right doses of medicine at the right time so that we may improve. So think of all these things happening as an educational experience, not a punitive experience. And be thankful to the Lord. That's why Kunti, you know, the Pandava's mother, she always used to tell Krishna, Krishna, give me sorrow. Because when I have sorrow, I remember you. When things are going well, I never remember you. So she asked for sorrow. You know, that's interesting. How many people would ask God for sorrow? So the point is that not that you want sorrow, but learn through each action learn through every message. So take every day in your life as a learning experience. That's why they say, na, you learn something new every day. So every day should be my day of evolution. I should get better. I should be more evolved. So that is the message of this karma and this tyaga. So next week, he will talk more about yajna, dana, tapa. And then he will talk about three types of tyaga. So that's what he says. Listen, shrunu me. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah. Sarve santu niramayah. Sarve bhadrani pasyantu. Ma kashchit dukkha bhag bhavet. Om shanti shanti shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru Namah. Hari Om.